Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your publisher, Kevin Lundquist.
Hi, Stephen. Good to be with you.
And your managing editor, Jake Shaw.
Hey, guys. Good to be back. Looking forward to it.
All right. First, let's go to a recap of Northwestern State. And the two guys that everybody you're talking about are Seth Russell and KD Cannon from that game. Jake, thoughts, and then Kevin.
Well, I mean, I think probably what everybody else thinks who watched the game, that Seth Russell looked much better than he's ever looked at any point. You know, he had flashes last year of being able to run the ball, but he never threw it quite like he did this past Saturday night. And KD Cannon, you know, I mean, you have six catches, 223 yards. What more can you say other than six catches and 223 yards? I mean, he was amazing. And, you know, I think people will concentrate on his speed. You know, he obviously beat Northwestern State deep several times, but he had a couple other catches, one on a long third down, you know, where he took a hit over the middle of the field. So it's not just a guy, a track star running down the sidelines. He showed that, you know, he looks like a natural receiver. So, I mean, as far as debuts go, those were two of the, it wasn't really a debut, but as far as breakout games, huge breakout games for both of them. And you like what both of them have in store for the future, although Seth Russell is going to have to wait.
Well, it wasn't a debut game, but it was the first start for both of them. So I think that's something, practicing with the ones all week and getting in there, that makes a difference. Kevin?
I think in a game like this where we all know that it was, I'm going to call it for what it is, kind of like glorified scrimmage where Baylor had five impacting players or starters out with injuries between Bryce Petty, Antoine Goodley, Clay Fuller, Corey Coleman, and Devin Chapin, and also Trevon Armstead, too, the tight end, who actually caught the first touchdown pass of the year. You know, I think it was a great way for guys like Seth Russell to get that first collegiate start and kind of get the butterflies out, because he's probably going to be the starter for 2015, and he obviously logged a lot of time last year in mop-up duties, but this time he gets to play in the first quarter. KD Cannon, great start for him. I just saw a stat on KD Cannon, guys. He's caught eight passes in his young college career, and he's averaging 35 yards a catch. That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. And so,
now, that's never going to happen. That's never going to stand up like that, but it really is kind of fun to talk about it in 2 weeks. And KD, you know, the one thing that I go back to was Art on the Big 12 coaches call, that when he watched KD play, when Mount Pleasant was playing at Terrell, this was after KD had committed. KD had a huge game that night. I think he had like six or seven touchdowns in that game, and he just talked about the fact that KD was already playing at such a speed that the game at that level was slowing down for him. And Art's feeling was that if he can get KD to play fast and smooth at the college level, there's no telling what he could do. And we got a glimpse of that on Saturday night against Northwestern State. What it means from here to Friday night against Buffalo moving forward to the Big 12 season, who knows? But I think that he's going to be a really interesting player to see develop, along with Davian Hall, because Davian's had a pretty good start too.
But those
two will be really fun to watch develop, depending on how much opportunity they get, and also depending on what happens to the other wide receivers in terms of their health.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that stat about him. There's two other stats that I found this week that, you know, just speak to what he's done so far. He has five catches of at least 30 yards this year, and that leads the nation. And he's got four catches of at least 40 yards this year, and that also leads the nation. So you've got a true freshman. I know it's only two games, and some teams have only played one game, but still, it's pretty incredible to see a true freshman leading the nation in big plays in the receiving game. I've seen Baylor for a long time. You know, I saw Kendall Wright come in. Terrence Williams had a slower start. Antoine Goodley did. You know, Tevin Reese. Nobody has looked like this as a true freshman at Baylor.
No.
Robbie Rhodes was a similarly ranked recruit, maybe a little lower than KD Cannon, I think. And, you know, we never saw any kind of flash from him. I know he had some injuries, but, I mean, what Cannon showed in one game, and you're right, it was a scrimmage. Every secondary Baylor plays is going to be better than Northwestern State. Still, mm-hmm. still what he did, you can't take it away from him. It's not his fault he was going up against that secondary. He did everything he could against, you know, the competition, and it was just a thing of beauty to watch.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steven. I'm sorry.
No, just that this, it's one thing that always comes back to me is how the expectations for Baylor have changed. That last year we beat anybody, you know, and it's great. But this year, you know, we beat somebody, you know, Baylor beat somebody by 70 points, and everybody kind of takes it for granted. You know, that was, yeah, they're a bad team. I was talking to one of the, or they're a not, you know, in Baylor's league. But I was talking to one of the Northwestern State guys on the sidelines, and he said we had 850,000 reasons to take this game. So, but you still have the fact that these guys went out, and Seth Russell threw for over 400 yards and a half. Katie Cannon caught over 200 yards and a half. That's impressive. I don't care who you're playing.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. He can't help the competition. You know, he's running as fast as he can, and Seth is throwing it to him. And, you know, if a guy's there or not, he's going to catch it. It's, you know, I think that play is going to be defended better in the future, but he's got the speed. I mean, you saw it in the state track meet before he graduated from high school. He's one of the fastest players in the state and in the nation, too. And, you know, you put some good hands with that, and you got yourself a star receiver.
Yeah, he's going to also run away from his fair share of college secondaries too, the Division I level, and some of those will be in the Big 12 too. I've no doubt in my mind that's going to happen.
The one thing that everybody is talking about in terms of concerns, if you can have concerns in a 64-point win, is the running game in the first half.
You know, I don't know what to make of it in terms of other than the fact that is it a technique thing? Is it a blocking assignment thing? Is it backs being tentative to hit the holes? I mean, you could point your finger at a lot of things. Are they getting the push, physical push that they need? Because let's face it, the Baylor offense, as much as we talk about how much they throw it around, it's really based off of what they do with the running game. And when they go against a defensive front in October, like at TCU, on October 11th, or when they go to Austin, because even despite Texas's problems, their defensive line still should be fairly decent, you would think. That being said, when you face defensive lines that are going to push back like this, it's going to be a struggle. So there are some things that Baylor's going to have to do in these next 2 weeks after the Buffalo game as they get ready for Iowa State as to what they can do to correct that, because that is two games in, guys. I'm not really liking what I'm seeing here.
Yeah, you know, I was where you are right now. Before I talked to a high school coach, just a new feature we're gonna have on Sikkim Sports. There's a high school coach who has maybe not connections to Baylor, but he has interest in Baylor, and he's gonna start breaking down film for us each week. And you know, I talked to him about some of this film, and he says the concerns about the offensive line are way overblown right now. And this is based on him watching the game again on film. Basically, what he told me is teams have been loading the box, which I don't know why they do that. And maybe that's why Katie Cannon has been so open. But you look at it, and I noticed against Northwestern State, they had a seven guys in the box, and they were going to make Seth Russell beat him. He did, and that's kind of why the running game didn't look so great. Two other things, though. One, I think Baylor is missing a home run hitter like Lake Seastrom. I feel like some of the runs we've seen this year, he might have taken 10 or 15 yards longer or maybe even more, just because, I mean, he was a sensational player. The NFL is crazy that he's not on a roster right now, but he was just the kind of guy who was special and can make someone miss and then outrun just about anybody. And not to take anything away from Shaq Linwood and the rest of the running backs at Baylor, they just don't have his same skill set as Lake Seastrom did. And I think we're starting to see, you know, just how special he was. And then lastly, last point on the running game, at least for now. Maybe you'll make me think of something else, Kevin. But Baylor leads all Big 12 teams in rushing yards before contact. And I know they're running it maybe a little more than other teams, but still, the fact that after every Big 12 team except for Kansas and TCU has played twice now, and so that's, you know, mm-hmm. that's seven other teams other than Baylor, and Baylor's ahead of all of them in yards before contact. So it says that the offensive line is doing a little better job than I think what people are giving credit for. So to me, it comes down to a couple of things, or a few things, finally. Again, sum it up, no Lake Sea Strunk. I think some of the backs, like Shaq Linwood, aren't hitting the holes as quicker or making the right reads. And I think there have been a few instances where some of these new linemen have maybe missed their assignment. And I think these are all things, other than bringing Lake back, these are things that are going to be corrected. I think the running backs are going to start hitting the holes harder because they're watching the film and they're getting used to the blocking schemes. And I think these linemen are seeing the films, and I think they're going to correct what they're missing as well.
The one thing I was going to say about that, too, is, you know, the home run hitter, I think that can become Johnny Jefferson. And we got some glimpses of that a couple on Saturday night, the 17-yard run that I think about in the first half. There were a couple of other runs that went there. And I think once Johnny kind of emerges in that, I'm not trying to say that his speed is what Lake's was, but I think he can be the home run hitter type of running back. We're just not there yet. He's two games into his young career. And
I agree. Lake was a slow starter.
Yeah, and I think what we're seeing in September, are we overreacting? Probably to an extent we are, because we're nitpicking it, the number eight team in the country, and we're nitpicking after they've outscored their first two opponents 115-6. So, I mean, we should all have such problems with this. But again, we all understand the big picture of September is kind of like the dress rehearsal for what October and November are going to bring us.
As of right now, I'm not too worried about the running game. The thing is, there are a couple of things that concern me, and one is that Linwood has now fumbled on the goal line twice, and I heard him all over going in. That can happen, but I'm concerned that could turn into a trend. Now, the reason that I'm not too concerned, Troy Baker was saying that all the film they had on Northwestern State had him with an odd man front, or with an even man front. They come out, they play an odd man front, stack extra people in the box. Browse said after the game, you know, we knew they were stacking the box, and we just didn't force the issue in the first half. We went ahead and worked on the passing game. After the first half finished, they came out, and Chris Johnson ended up handing off, and they pretty well bulldozed as they wanted. Now, we won't really know until they come up against a solid defensive line, but I'm not ringing the panic, you know, I'm not hitting the panic bell just yet.
Yeah, I agree, Steven. I think if Northwestern State was running four-man front and having their linebackers, you know, double-team the receivers and, you know, maybe five guys up at the line of scrimmage, I'd be worried, but that wasn't the case, like you mentioned. I mean, they were loaded up for the run, and, I mean, really, look, they weren't going to win. They had to pick their poison, and they thought, well, let's make a first-time starter beat us and not the running game. And, look, you know, one way or another, they were going to lose. That's just what they happened to choose.
All right. So that's on the running game. Next thing, we've already talked about it a little bit on the injury status. Let's see, all four wide receivers are out. Petty is now in, he's out, now he's in. Devin Chase still has a couple more weeks. He probably won't be back till after their off week. And all the injuries are on offense, and all the injuries are in the skill positions. Kevin.
I think it's just one of those things where, you know, we've talked about this. You know, Corey Coleman is the one injury that concerns me out of all of them. I mean, obviously Clay Fuller's clavicle is something that'll just be something that'll have to be addressed, and hopefully he'll be ready for Iowa State. I think everyone seems to think that they're going to be 100% ready to go against Iowa State with all the receivers, Fuller, Antoine Goodley, and Corey Coleman. The Coleman thing, though, is the one that the day that it happened on Meet the Bears, just something about that just really bothered me, the way it's looked. And I'm not going to say anything to say to suggest that it's beyond a hamstring, but if it's not what it could be in terms of worse than a pull, it's darn close, because you don't have an issue that's been dragging on for roughly 5 weeks if it hasn't been a real severe. I mean, it was just when it happened that day, you could tell the look of disgust in Corey's eyes kind of told you that it was really bad.
Yeah.
And then I had a couple people tell me the same thing that had happened. They said they could tell that he was really, really upset about it because he knew. And I know that what Art said on Monday's presser versus what he told the media on Tuesday, thinking that they thought they were going to back and then they didn't think, then when they saw him Monday at practice, didn't give him the same indications. I've said all along, guys, with Coleman, when as soon as this happened, the week, if he wasn't really healthy enough to go for SMU, I would have said, we will see you later for Iowa State, and now we're going to get that. And hopefully he will be ready for Iowa State.
Yeah, hopefully. This is conjecture only, but, I mean, if Katie Cannon and Davian Hall were tripping over their own feet and Baylor didn't have anyone proven other than Jay Lee, I do wonder if they might have tried to push a guy like Coleman or Antoine Goodley out there this weekend. But I feel like, look, the staff knows that what they have out there healthy is good enough to win. I think, you know, they're going to take a precaution and not play Coleman. It's crazy, though. You're right, Stephen. Your top four receivers are out again, your second straight game. But, you know, score one victory for Art Briles on the non-conference scheduling philosophy, because it's working out for him right now that Baylor is playing some cupcakes because they're getting to rest the guys and they're not going up against a really good team. And, you know, from that standpoint, it works out. But I think it's really great to have Petty back, because I don't want a rusty Petty going into Iowa State, because he didn't look great against SMU, whether it was the injury or not. You know, he was off on a lot of his throws. This is a great warm-up. I know Buffalo is not a good team, but from all we're hearing, it's a blackout up there. They're going to be pretty fired up. It's going to be as loud as that stadium can possibly be, and so I think this is a good tune-up for Petty to get out there and again, shake some rust off. Having him back to me is more important than any receiver.
And the other good thing about it, Art talked about it too. Remember, guys, last year how everything was at home last year in September, and then I think their first conference game last year, and their first road game was at Kansas State.
Yeah.
And that thing was pretty rocky last year. Now they were able to pull that game out last year in Manhattan, but it was kind of a rocky thing. Now this year it's completely flipped because four out of these next five are away from McLean Stadium. But I kind of like the fact that this game with Buffalo is on the road, because it kind of gets them away from the home routine and getting them on the road, because the first two Big 12 conference games are going to be on the road in Ames and in Austin. So just even though Buffalo isn't going to be confused with any of those other teams, just the idea of being on the road, everybody in the building is against you except for several who are going to be making a weekend of it, Baylor fans making a weekend of it up by Niagara Falls, you know, that sort of thing, where I think that's a really good thing for those guys, just to kind of get away from the stadium, understand the routine. And, you know, let's face it, when you go on the road and you've got a bunch of young kids, they kind of tend to play a little bit different just because they're out of their element. And so you got to get used to it a little bit, and hopefully this game does it and Baylor still takes care of business in comfortable fashion like we think they will.
Yeah, I agree. I love the fact. I know a lot of people laugh at, you know, how is a MAC team hosting a Big 12 team, you know. But, you know, Missouri played at Toledo last weekend, so it does happen. And I agree from the standpoint of playing on the road, introducing guys like Katie Cannon. We keep bringing his name up, but it's really important that these young guys get the road experience, even if it's not a good opponent. But they're gonna be in a different locker room with a different preparation schedule. So I think this is I have no problem with playing at Buffalo. Especially now you're on national TV too, Friday night, no other game going up against you. It's a nice showcase game.
You think Davian Hall and Katie are licking their chops at that opportunity with being on a Friday night showcase game with everyone in the country watching them?
Well, you know, I mean, they're coming off, they're what, 9-10 months removed from playing on Friday nights themselves, so this has become natural to them.
Yeah, no question.
Okay, and we've run a little bit longer than we planned, but last question in this first segment. Is there something actually up with Silas Niceta? How good is
he? It's funny, Stephen, because before the season started, we did a preview, you know, of Baylor season. I said, you know, which transfer would make a big impact, and you know, Silas Nceta transferred from Cornell, so I included him in that discussion. And when you asked Bryles about him, he said, "Who?" You know, he did a double take. I'm sure Bryles, he knows who he is now, and he knows that he has an interesting running back on his hands. You know, I talked about earlier about the high school coach that I've been talking with about breaking down film. He said he went back and watched Nasita's high school film, and he said he's not surprised Nasita's doing well in this offense, because even though Nasita played at a triple option veer offense in high school in California, a lot of the blocking concepts are very similar to what Baylor does. And so he feels like Nasita right now is hitting the holes a little faster than the guys ahead of him on the depth chart. And I also think, secondly, it's got to be said, he's going against a worn-out team by the time he comes in the game. But all that said, he's really doing some great stuff for a walk-on. I mean, he's coming in the game, and he's just shredding teams. And he looks great out there. I'm not ready to put him ahead of any of the other Baylor running backs, but if he keeps doing this, he's going to get the coach's attention eventually.
I'll tell you this much, too. If he winds up, you know, if they need him in a pinch, if somebody goes out for a series or two, or they lose somebody and they have to put him in the game when it's on the line, and he's able to contribute decently, whenever that is going to happen, don't be surprised if they turn around and give him a scholarship just the way this is going, because as positive a start as he's had, and again, you don't rush for over 100 yards against air. Someone's got to tackle and get around some people and do some things there too. So, I mean, he's doing something right. Obviously, we'll know a lot more as the season gets a little bit more challenging. But if he's able to do this against those types of opponents, and the coaches look at him and say, "You've just earned a scholarship for the rest of the year, moving forward," you can't argue with it. We'll see what this means. And I tell you one thing. One last point before we move on to the next segment is, his presence could be really important to Baylor's coaching staff, keeping the redshirt on Terrence Williams, the kid who the running back coming in from Ennis. If he's really able to sustain something from that physical presence, because that's what Terrence is. He's Terrence, but he's just not as fast as Terrence. But if they are able to use him throughout the course of the season and save that redshirt for Terrence, that's going to be so important for the program moving forward in 2015 and 16 and so forth.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that point before we move on, but Shaq Linwood and Devin Chafin, after this year, have two more years of eligibility left. Johnny Jefferson will have three more. So you've got a logjam at running back of a lot of talented guys who will be factors for the next 2 and 3 years. So, yeah, I agree. You want to keep Williams, his redshirt on, because you don't want to waste a season knowing that he's only going to have three left. You want four productive years out of him, and a guy like Silas Nceta might make that happen.
Now, they don't take a lot of running backs on this team as much as they heavily recruit, as much as that offense really needs it to be an important part of what they do. And that's why you got a guy like Jamichael Hasty, and that's why this coaching staff is still looking for a second running back for the 2015 class.
Yeah. Well, I think Nceta, I think he's a good fundamental runner. I think he does everything well. I don't think he's incredibly talented, but I think that he's just a guy that does the most with what he's got. And I agree with y'all absolutely that they're going to try and keep the red shirt on. Now, that being said, I could also see, I think that Chafin and Linwood, I think they're good runners, but I don't think that their starting spots are etched in stone. I could see Jefferson moving ahead, and I could see Terrence moving in and overtaking them in the next year. But I think Nceta is the guy that, I think you're going to see him as a change of pace back or a relief back or something like that. And I think you're going to see him in a lot of games. All right. When we come back, we will be talking about Buffalo. And so we'll catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast, and now we're going to talk about shuffling off to Buffalo. We've already talked a little bit about the traveling. Any additional thoughts on that, guys?
Oh, I think from that standpoint that, you know, they're going to have to leave town, obviously, tomorrow morning or Thursday morning, I should say, and then they'll get in and try and get settled to their kind of like their walkthrough. I mean, it's a shortened week because of the game being on Friday night on ESPN, so it's just one of those things where they're going to have to just kind of condense things a little bit closer. But on the other side, they'll have an extra day to get ready. They'll have 15 days to get ready for Iowa State. So, you know, football teams are such creatures of routine that when you're – weekly routine is disrupted by a day, and this will be Baylor's third game in 13 days, that I'm sure they'll handle it fine. I mean, the coaching staff has been through these types of schedules before, and when, you know, television comes calling, you want to put your product in front of a national audience, they'll handle it fine. It's just a matter of just making some adjustments on how they prepared this week. Probably had to jam a little bit more into Sunday, a little bit more into Monday, kind of like in making, you know, where Tuesday would be a heavy work day, maybe Monday was more of a heavy work day and that sort of thing, and then kind of on Wednesday that might have tapered off in terms of the contact and things that they were going through. I would imagine that Monday and Tuesday were the heavy days, and of course tomorrow, Thursday, being the travel day, and then playing on Friday.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, outside of actual gameplay, those are the concerns. You know, you got a lot of guys who are in important roles. They're going to be playing their first road game of their careers. You remember Petty last year at Kansas State didn't look his best. It was his first road game as a starter. And, you know, you could see a little bit of difference in his play, maybe a little nerves, too. So, you know, those are the concerns. As for actually in-game concerns, I really don't have any, because if Baylor shows up, I don't care what Buffalo brings, Baylor is going to win this game. I do want to see how Baylor defends the deep ball. Last year, Buffalo had a few deep balls thrown with success against Baylor's secondary. You know, if Buffalo gets time to throw, I want to see the secondary in action because, frankly, they have not been tested at all through two games.
No.
And that's going to change, you know, as the season goes along. I don't know when it's going to happen, maybe with Iowa State, maybe not. But Buffalo does like to throw deep. They've got a very serviceable quarterback, and he started against Baylor last year, and I believe they took a 7-0 lead at Baylor last year throwing over the Baylor secondary. You know, that's as far as actual in-game stuff. I still want to see the secondary. They've looked great so far, but they have not been tested consistently in a game, and so that's one thing I'm really going to be examining on Friday night.
You know, just to piggyback on what you said about Joe Licata, Buffalo's quarterback, and he's thrown for basically 700 yards this year, so that's averaging 350 yards a game.
Kevin, don't exaggerate. He's thrown for 699.
Okay, all right. I was trying to make it more conversational, but okay, Mr. Statman. But anyway, but you know, he's thrown touchdown passes of 65 and 41 yards, so they're going to air it out. But he also has thrown four interceptions, and you know, he had now curse a lot of those yards last week when they lost at Army. He had to throw it a lot to get him back into the game and make that thing a little bit more interesting. But you're right, Jake. It's a case where how much is the secondary going to get really tested? They probably will get tested on a couple of occasions. And, you know, secondary with cornerbacks, it's a tough life. You've got to learn to forget. There's going to be times when you get beat. What you don't want to happen is that you can kind of live with one time when you get beat on a long gainer. But if it becomes a situation where it becomes nearly routine, then you got a problem. And we just don't know that about the secondary. I will say this. Xavien Howard, I do not see a ball going to his side of the field tomorrow on Friday night.
That's my point.
I mean, I still can't. I don't even know how you describe the interception that he came up with against Northwestern State. I mean, Steven, you watched it there on the field level. I'm watching it. I'm like, I have no idea how he did that.
Yeah, go ahead, Steven. You were there.
It was pretty crazy, but you know, part of what's going on with the secondary is it goes back to the defensive line that we talked about. Mm-hmm. I was standing on the sidelines, and I was looking, and I watched when they lined up before they ran their first play. I turned to the photographer next to me, and I said, "They are going to die." It was just look at them and tell the difference. And they didn't get as many sacks because the Northwestern State quarterback was a really good scrambler, so he was getting outside and able to throw it away. But I think the other thing that we've got with the defensive secondary right now is they haven't been tested that much, but you haven't seen them out of position.
Yeah.
The receivers are still running their routes, but you're not seeing any receivers loose, even though, you know, the guy didn't have time to throw. Neither one of the quarterbacks they faced has had time to throw. But you're not seeing guys loose out in the secondary. They're in position where they're supposed to be.
Eventually, teams will have time to throw because as impressed as I've been with the Baylor defensive line, they're going to go up against better offensive lines, and, you know, sometimes they're going to get beat. But I agree, Stephen, they have been in position, although I think Ryan Reed, the other cornerback starting opposite of Xavien Howard, has had a little more trouble, you know, kind of locating the ball in the air, whereas Howard has been just, I mean, he's turning his head three or four full steps before the ball gets there. He looks like he knows what he's doing. So, Kevin, there's nothing in the actual gameplay that maybe concerns you? Petty being rusty, you know, the offensive line?
Probably, but I mean, I think what the thing is that, you know, the one thing I've got to find out with Bryce, and, you know, I talked about it in the comments and after the SMU game, is there's just something that, with Bryce's game that I don't find totally in sync. He's looked off basically since the Oklahoma game last year. Those deep balls are not looking very good, and I try to attribute it to the fact that the deep balls weren't looking good toward the end of last year because he didn't have Tevin Rees, who all he had to do was just throw it way out there, and with Tevin's speed, he'd just say, go get it, and he did. With this case, I just think that I think the issue with Bryce, guys, is that I think he puts the world on his shoulders to such a great extent that he's afraid to fail, and he doesn't relax and say, if I screw up and make a bad throw, if I throw into double coverage and it gets picked off, that he eternally beats himself up. I'm really hoping that he can. I don't know. I'm just trying to guess as to what it is. But from my perspective, if that's what it is, I'm hoping that he will just relax and let the game come to him, to use an use a sports expression.
I think that's a fair point, Kevin. I mean, you don't want to say go throw more interceptions, but you look at great quarterbacks at any level, you know, a lot of them throw a larger amount of interceptions than what Petty threw last year, and I think sometimes it's because they're taking greater risks, and I think you're right. I think Petty didn't take a ton last year. He didn't have to in non-conference, and when he had a little more pressure on him, maybe he was taking sacks or throwing it away, but he wasn't making some riskier throws. And again, you don't want to say, you know, take too many risks and put your defense in a bad spot by throwing an interception. But I think there at some point he is going to have to take more chances because look, the better defenses are going to be covering these deep balls. You know, Katie Cannon, I love him. He's not going to be running solo against TCU secondary or Oklahoma secondary or even, you know, Texas or Kansas State. He's going to have to take a few more chances and maybe fit a ball into the window that he's not going to have to do against Buffalo or maybe against SMU. So I think you're right. I think maybe he is just trying to play too perfectly. And it's hard to fault a guy for that, but at some point,
but it's also impossible.
Exactly, it is impossible. So,
but you know, I've been saying that for the last couple of years that I think Petty puts too much pressure on himself. But it's really fun to watch the difference when you interview Russell after a game and you interview Petty after a game, because Russell is Joe Cool, and you know the thing about Russell is he might throw an interception because he's got that kind of Brett Favre mentality. You know that I can put it in there.
Yeah.
Petty wants to make absolutely certain he doesn't make a mistake. Now, I would like to see Petty go maybe a little more Drew Brees. I don't want to see him going full Tony Romo.
No, I think it's a good point. I when I hear them interviewed and see them play, I do get the picture of Russell being a gunslinger, and I get the feeling that Petty's a little more conscientious in how he plays, and it's hard to fault either one of them. Sometimes you just kind of want that perfect mix of the two. Someone who's smart, but someone who also is a little bit daring. And, you know, that's what Art Briles says. He wants someone who burns hot, you know, someone who's extremely, you know, passionate and fiery. And I think that's why Art Briles asked Bryce Petty to grow a beard in the offseason. He wanted to see a, you know, just kind of a different side of him, someone who's leading the team. So I think it's a good point. Russell could borrow some from Petty, and I think Petty could borrow some from Russell too.
Yeah, you know, I asked Petty about if he was thinking about growing the beard, and he said nope. And anyway, he said a mullet's completely out of the question. And yes, I really did ask him about the mullet. One of the things I want to throw out, just, you know, the travel, we kind of moved past it, but I want to come back to it, is that when Buffalo came down last year, they left 70 degrees and walked into 115 degrees.
Yeah.
So they were ready to get on the plane after the first quarter. I mean, it was, their med crews were running by IVs for everyone at the end of the first half. And so you're not going to have that up in Buffalo. But, you know, Baylor's never had a reputation as being a good road team. And I think this better defense may make a difference in that, because defenses travel better than offenses, because you can't disrupt a defense with noise like you can an offense.
Excellent point once again, Stephen. I agree with that. Baylor seems to slow down offensively on the road because of noise, but that won't be a fact with the defense. You hope that defensive line can go crazy like they have been.
All right, and I'm going to confess that the only time I've seen Buffalo, I saw them last year, and I've seen the matte black helmets. So what can y'all tell me about Buffalo? Jake, you've done an interview with one of the Buffalo beat reporters.
Yeah, I talked to Mark, man, I'm going to butcher his last name, which is becoming a staple on our podcast of me butchering names, Mark Galgan. He's the Buffalo beat writer for the Buffalo News. You know, I've talked to him. I watched almost the entire Buffalo Army game last week. I'll admit, I turned it off when they got down big and they ended up scoring, I think, 22 straight points in the fourth quarter to make it an 8-point game. So I do know a little bit about them, a fair amount. We've talked about Joe Licata, their running back. I mean, he's completing 70% of his passes. That's a very high percentage. And he's averaging a little more than 8 yards an attempt, and that's pretty decent too. You know, anywhere from that 8 to 10 range, and your quarterback's doing a good job. He has thrown 4 picks, so he is vulnerable. Their running game is missing Brandon Oliver. He's off in the NFL. I think he had like 100 yards against the Cowboys in the preseason, so, you know, that puts him on par with every NFL running back. They lost their best receiver from last year, Jeff Newts, and I probably butchered that one too. But they've had a couple guys step in. Ron Willoughby, he's 6'4", 200, you know, a big, imposing receiver. So, you know, you want to see how Baylor's cornerbacks do against him. Another guy, Marcus McGill. These two guys, one of them had a breakout game against Duquesne, their opening season opponent, and the other one had a breakout game against Army last week. And then one little note I find fascinating. They have a safety that leads the team in tackles. He leads the team in tackles for loss, and he leads the team in sacks. So if you're looking at only in numbers alone, it looks like Buffalo is going to blitz a lot with their secondary, because you don't often see a safety leading their team in sacks. So, you know, the basics, Buffalo runs a spread offense. They want to run. They did it horribly against Duquesne in the opener, only averaged 3.5 yards per carry. They did it pretty well last week against Army, but Army has a terrible run defense, so that wasn't a surprise. You know, basically, they're a middle-of-the-road to decent-to-good MAC team. And those teams are what they are. You know, they can surprise you every once in a while, but look, the talent level on Buffalo's roster just doesn't compare to what Baylor has. So some interesting guys out there, but, you know, from what I've seen of Buffalo and what I've read, you know, Baylor needs to win this comfortably, 4 or 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, they're predicted 4th in the MAC East behind Bowling Green. Dino Babers, the former Baylor assistant, you know, a lot of projections behind Dino Babers, the school there, along with Ohio and Akron. So, you know, the Bulls will be right. You know, we'll probably, you know, one of those teams that if everything falls into place, maybe they're trying to fight for one of those bowls that the MAC is lined up with. So, we'll just kind of have to wait and see about what kind of season they have. I do think Baylor's going to win this game exceptionally comfortable, like 55-13, something along those lines. You know, with Joe Licata, yeah, we saw him last year, and he made some pretty decent plays for them. But, you know, the other thing is, too, is that it should be a beautiful night. It's going to be a little bit crisp up there. That game's going to probably kick off right around 60 degrees up there in Buffalo, and we'll probably finish in the low 50s by the time they finish, which will be downright exciting for everybody, that it'll be nice and cool. Of course, we're going to get a front down here in Texas here in a few days. But I think that if Baylor, again, like we said about SMU and like we said about Northwestern State, Baylor's going to have to absolutely just completely implode with more penalties than they normally commit. That's a segment of its own some other time. And then just a host of turnovers, boneheaded decisions in terms of coverages, things like that, to give the Bulls a chance. It's a great night, though, for Buffalo. It's a blackout. They got the matted helmets. They've been talking this thing up since August because it's their big shot on national television. Good for them. I hope they make the most of it. And then reality will set in about for the next 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what the Buffalo News beat writer told me is you know, I asked him about how competitive it can be, and he basically said it won't be. And he knows his team well. He said the team they had last year was a lot better than this one. They have trouble in the secondary. They have one proven defensive back, and after that, you know, it's a real big question mark. They lost Khalil Mack, basically an All-American linebacker who really was a no-show against Baylor last year. Baylor completely neutralized him.
Right.
You know, he's not back either. I mentioned Brandon Oliver, their running back. They lost, I'd say if you had to rank their players last year, they lost their three best players from 2013. So they're not as good as last year. They have the home field advantage, but it shouldn't matter.
Okay. I think that about wraps up our discussion of Buffalo, unless one of y'all have something to add.
Yeah, I have one thing to add, and that is Buffalo, 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 Buffalo. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up.
All righty.
you guys really don't know what I'm talking about?
You know.
Okay, well, I hate to get all English major on you, but that's what I was. There is a sentence, Buffalo, 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 that is grammatically correct.
Okay, is this a John Steinbeck thing?
Yeah, no, it's not Steinbeck. Some professor came up with it, and basically, Buffalo is also a verb meaning to bully or intimidate, and so using that along with an adjective of Buffalo, as well as the noun of Buffalo. And now I've just lost every single listener on our podcast. But basically, there is a grammatically correct sentence that uses the word Buffalo 8 times in a row. So, you know, if you
I'm
have
looking
that,
at it right now.
So basically, when Baylor's up by 35 points in the third quarter and you're kind of losing interest in the game, look it up. Type in Buffalo 8 times, and I guarantee you'll find it.
All I had to do was type it in 3 times, and it worked. And, in fact, if you want the Wikipedia, since we're doing this, Buffalo 8 times is a grammatical sentence in American English used as an example of how homonyms and homophones can be used to create complicated linguistic constructs.
Yes. Yeah, let's leave it at that. Like I said, I've already just let's move on.
All we need now to close this segment is the State Farm commercial where the guys are looking at the bison and the one rams his car, and then they call for the State Farm agent to get him out of it. So,
all right, State Farm is there. There you go.
I have no response to that.
I think we're good.
Okay, I don't know when I lost control of this, but. Okay, so when we come back, we are going to talk a little bit about recruiting, and the president was at the game again against Northwestern State. We'll see you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting sign, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sports Cast. And when we said the president was at the game, we were not talking about a former or present president. Kevin, can you tell us about it?
Well, Chad President, the 2015 commit and actually signee, because he signed his financial aid documents back in August and will be enrolling in January, made his first appearance at McLean Stadium for the Northwestern State game. He could not be there for the opener against SMU. Really enjoyed it. It was called it a great venue. I thought it was really cool that wherever you were in the stadium that you could walk around and still get a really good view of the game. And so, of course, this is going to be his home for the next, roughly 4 or 5 years once he gets on campus. And I could tell he was really excited about the way it turned out. Just had a great experience. Of course, he, like many other recruits, talked about how great the recruiting room was, the spread was for the recruits before the game, all that good stuff. It was not a big gathering of recruits like you would expect for an opponent like Northwestern State. Maybe about a dozen or so, something like that. The other notable recruit that was there was the 2016 linebacker out of Manor, and Eric Fowler. He was there, and he had a good time from what everything we understand. And, of course, Baylor seems to be in a pretty good early position with him. Nothing as far as him committing anytime soon seems to be coming down the pike. But, again, Baylor continuing to sow its seeds with him pretty well. But, again, it's a case where with President, the good thing for Chad is the fact that beyond this experience of watching Baylor in person in the new stadium is the fact that he's healthy. He's off to a really good start offensively this year. I think he's really kind of willed himself to be in a position where he wants to, as we've talked about this before, Jake and Steven, where he really wants to show people that he's, he's the real deal. And he's, think about it this way, guys. He's in two games against Round Rock and Austin Westlake. He's already accounted for over 800 yards. He has 593 yards passing. He has 227 yards rushing. So do the math. That's 820 yards between the two disciplines, along with 7 touchdowns, 4 rushing, 3 passing. He's only thrown 1 pick, so he's off to a great start. And he'll get a decent test this week when they play at Bryan on Friday. I really like the start. He was actually kind of off to this start last year before he suffered the leg injury against South Lake Carroll at Floyd Casey Stadium, which, I'm sure there's probably some of that voodoo-esque, and gosh, third game of the year this year, this is the same time when it happened last year, and, if you're into that sort of thing, which I'm not, and I hope he's not either, but he's off to a really good start, and I'm sure everyone who's following his season right now has to be really excited about what he's up to right now.
Yeah, I mean, you say a decent test. I think this will be the worst team of the three that Temple has played so far, and they beat Round Rock. They lost to Westlake last week by a point because of a missed extra point.
Right.
So that's another thing you like to see is that, Temple has a good pass, but in the past 10 years they haven't been all that great.
Mm-hmm.
But you do like to see, one, he's putting up yards, and two, he's either winning games or keeping his team competitive. Westlake's a very good program. They played Carroll close, South Lake Carroll. You mentioned them in the opener. So it's a very encouraging sign as far as his future as a quarterback, that he's putting up excellent numbers and has his team in position to win games.
And I think the other thing too, just to point out too, and some of the other recruits that are, because we started the player performance, or we actually did it last week, but it was kind of a more of a subdued version. This one, we got the whole thing set up on our site if you haven't seen it yet, but it's called the player performance chart. But, obviously two of the recruits are not playing this year or will not play, depending on Jamichael Hasty's status. Jamichael's out at least indefinitely for the back injury. And, of course, Jordan Tolbert over at Ridgepoint, Fortbred Ridgepoint, he's out for the year with the torn ACL. But a couple of players just to note about is the fact that Brecken Hager's off to a pretty good start down at Westlake, because he had a really big game against Temple, where he had six solos and six assisted tackles there. Jamison Houston, you know, I realize it's Austin St. Michael's, and who do they play, and do you know him anything about these opponents that he's playing against, that sort of thing? I get that. But, you know, he's accounted for nearly a little over 300 yards offensively, and they're playing him a little bit on defense. And, of course, you can't forget Blake Lynch, who in his first game with Gilmer against Texarkana Liberty ILO, three touchdowns. Last week, it was almost the same thing where he threw for a 65-yard touchdown pass, which was his only attempt. He caught a 47-yard touchdown pass, which was his only reception. And he had a touchdown rushing, but he only had two carries on that. So basically four touches and three touchdowns in their game last week against Longview Pine Tree. So it's like he has seven offensive touches and six touchdowns. Would you take that ratio?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, though, because I know the receiving core is banged up right now, but that's an anomaly. I think he plays defense for Baylor.
I do, too.
I think he comes in as a safety. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's not a bad thing to see a potential safety being extremely explosive on offense, too. I mean, it just shows his athleticism and why he's, you know, one of the top-ranked athletes in the nation. Because he can do, I mean, he showcased that he can do everything on the field. He's really an exciting prospect, and he's a guy who's going to arrive early. So he'll be here in January of 2015. And, you know, I think he's a guy, you see how many true freshmen Baylor played already this year. He's a guy who I think he could play as a true freshman in 2015.
Yeah, about 6'4", too, something like that.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Jamison Houston. He's, you know, the athlete. He's committed as a cornerback to Baylor out of Austin St. Michael's. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Interesting note about him. He, you know, when he committed to Baylor, he was, I wouldn't say a total unknown, but mostly unknown, not only to Baylor fans, but in recruiting circles as well. You know, you see this happen with Baylor. They find a guy, and suddenly other people offer. This week he got an Oklahoma State offer, and you know, I've got a call into him to see how that impacts him. When I spoke to him last, he seemed, you know, 100% solid to Baylor. But as you know very well, Kevin, recruiting can be very odd and things can change. So, you know, we'll see how that impacts him. And I thought it's kind of interesting that he picks up the offer the same week that a Baylor target, a guy who almost, in his words, almost committed to Baylor, Dia Meeson, the JUCO offensive lineman, he committed to Oklahoma State after his visit there a week after visiting Baylor. So, you know, Baylor is in the same conference with OSU. There's going to be some target crossover, and it looks like there's a couple of ongoing, or at least one ongoing battle between Baylor and OSU right now. It's, I don't know, a little point of irony or coincidence there.
Yeah, it's the same thing like Montrell Wilson, the safety out of Keller Fossil Ridge. As soon as Baylor offered, and then he committed a couple weeks later, that he got offers from Arkansas and TCU. So it's really kind of weird. It's kind of funny. But I also think, too, that it's a sign of respect of
validation
Baylor's staff does. Because as soon as Baylor offers up, you know, maybe in years past, in the early aughts, and even in Art's first 2 or 3 years, when Baylor was offering somebody, everyone just said, all right, fine. But now, when Baylor is offering them, and obviously their on-the-field success speaks for itself, when that happens, now it gives people a reason to give them a double take and why other offers will be coming in. And Baylor's still going to have to do a little work, I would think, to just make sure that everything with Jamison is solid so that there's nothing, so that he'll float off the reservation. They had to do a little bit maintenance work with Montrell Wilson because after the Arkansas TCU offers came in, he got a little bit loosey-goosey, if you will, with the whole thing with TCU. He went to a TCU camp rather than coming down to Baylor for an event. And I think that kind of had the coaches a little bit on edge. And it seemed like after they brought Montrell down for a scrimmage, and it seems like everything now is now 100% between Montrell and the coaching staff. So
yeah, I mean,
some maintenance things, I think what this staff is trying to do is make sure that nothing gets, you know, wild with the 12 kids that they've got committed right now.
Yeah, exactly right. It's a small class. You'd hate to see a couple of defections late because, you know, if you had 25 guys coming in and two of them defected, you know, that's a small percentage, but two out of 12 would be bad. So
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you see that before. I mean, Baylor had Adrian Colbert from Mineral Wells committed, and he switched to Texas late. Mm-hmm. John Humphrey with this class has switched. You know, a guy Baylor offered somewhat early, and then other big names come in, and he gets starry-eyed and changes. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it we have with this 2015 class is not as much recruitment as maintenance. Just making sure that the guys they have in the fold, the 12 commits that they do have, remain strong with Baylor. And as this Oklahoma State offer for Jamison Houston shows, it's just a reminder that if a guy is committed to a school, it doesn't mean other schools are going to stop pursuing him.
You know, I saw one thing that was kind of interesting when you mentioned Brecklin Hager. Kevin, you were with me when we were up at Big 12 Media Days.
Right.
Brecklin and Bryce's father, Britt, was a big-time player for the University of Texas. And so I think everybody kind of figured that, you know, Bryce was going to be a legacy go there. Bryce commits to Baylor. Brecklin commits to Baylor. At the Big 12 Media Days, asked Bryce Hager, who does he consider his biggest rival? He didn't even blink. He said Texas. And so I don't know what happened in the recruiting process, if they just told Bryce to go away or what, but I don't think we have to worry about Brecklin switching to Baylor or to Texas.
No.
I don't think Brecklin's going to – to be honest with you, I don't even think Texas has Brecklin on its radar. So, and that's not a knock on Texas. It's probably their philosophy of whatever skill set that he has doesn't fit what Charlie Strong wants. I'm sure Texas is obviously very well aware of him because of the family line and that sort of thing. But, you know,
he's playing 15 miles away.
Yeah, but guys like Brecklin, I think, are system guys, that they'll fit certain systems. They're also the kind of players that Phil Bennett likes, from the fact that they are these knockdown kids that are kind of like old school, that they'll just roll up their sleeves and work really hard. Maybe they, I don't want to say limited in their ability because that's not fair to them, but maybe their skill set may not be as athletic as other kids, but they do certain things well on a football field that'll help the defense become a full unit. And that's probably what Phil saw and Jim Gush saw as far as Brecklin's skill set was concerned. That's why he committed to them in the spring.
Okay. We have a little bit on basketball going on. Is Scott Drew kind of piggybacking on this opening of the stadium and everything to get a little flash for his basketball team?
Not as much as you would hope. You know, before the stadium opened, there was kind of a stunner on the recruiting scene when Plano West center Tyler Davis committed to Texas A&M. I think that caught a lot of people off guard, probably even Texas A&M too. And then when that went down, there was always the chance that his teammate DJ Hogue would follow suit. Sure enough, even after a visit to Baylor, he went down on an A&M visit and he committed. Hogue is a small forward, a great shooter, not a terribly athletic guy, but has some good height for a small forward. And you know, I felt like those were Baylor's two top targets a month ago. And you know, now they're an hour and a half away, not at a rival program by any means, although they will play this year. Still, yeah, it's got to be frustrating for the staff when you have your run of success and they're leaving for a school that's coming off a second-round exit in the CBI tournament, which if any listener can tell you what the CBI stands for, you know, we'll give you a free shirt or something, because totally inconsequential. So it's got to be frustrating. You know, people's instant reaction is going to be, what is A&M doing to get these guys? And I think that's stupid because, you know, Baylor was in this position before where they weren't a respected program and they were getting some top-flight recruits. So, you know, credit A&M, they got them, but it's at Baylor's expense, and now I think they're at plan B and C. I think there's only really one spot left in this class, and I really was hoping for Baylor's sake and for Scott Drew's sake he'd finish this class with a 4- or 5-star recruit, because those have been harder to come by the last couple years.
You know, their class right now, just as a reset, they have King McClure out of the Texas Titans guard, the 4-star kid. He's in the Rivals top 150. He's ranked 75 in the latest rankings that came out a couple weeks ago. Then you've got Jake Lindsey, who's obviously the son of the former Baylor star Dennis Lindsey, who's now the general manager of the Utah Jazz. He's a 3-star, solid player. He committed a couple weeks ago in August, and then a couple weeks before him was the seven-footer out of Australia, who's also playing in JUCO ball in Kansas, by the name of Joseph Aquil. Those two, Lindsay and Aquil, are three-star kids. I mean, this is a solid group of kids that Baylor's got. I think there were some higher aspirations based on the Sweet 16 performance, that they were probably going to have a little bit more momentum, like you talked about, Jake, that they, it really looked like, if you were to ask me before, you know, Tyler Davis committed to A&M, which I think was on on August 22nd, when that went down, I think if you'd asked me on August 21st or any earlier, I would have said that Baylor is in really, really good position with those two. I think the Baylor coaches would have felt the same way too. In fact, I think everybody in college basketball recruiting circles just kind of said, we're just kind of assumed that this was going to be Davis and Hogue committing to Baylor. It was a question of when, not if, and just get the formality out of the way and have it done. And then all of a sudden, August 22nd, everything flips to where Tyler flips to or commits to A&M. And DJ Hogue, who has all these visits set up other locations, including Arizona, he did make his official visit to Baylor last week and then goes to A&M last week, commits. And now it's kind of like, okay, so who do we have left? Well, Admon Gilder, the guard out of Dallas Madison, came in for his official visit last week. I think I know Baylor likes him. He has a good relationship with the Baylor coaching staff. I just don't know what that would mean. Would you want Gilder and King McClure in the same class? I struggle with that.
And Baylor went heavy on guards in the 2014 class, too. So right. I really think they needed one more big man, and Tyler Davis would have been that. And, you know, DJ Hogue is more of a small forward type. And so, you know, that's a great position to have in college basketball. It's a 6'7" guy playing the three position, you know, instead of having a tiny, you know, three-man backcourt. So I agree. Yeah. I mean, Adam and Gilder looks like the best of the bunch. And, you know, if you're drafting from a best player available, you know, that's maybe who you take. But I think a forward or a center is really what this class needs more.
I agree.
I mean, it went from looking like a star-studded class to, it's not panic time, but it's just not what you were expecting. And Scott Drew is a little bit a victim of his own success. You know, he signed some 5-star guys and a lot of 4-star guys, so when he doesn't do it, people are kind of get concerned because that was the track record.
But maybe the good thing about this is that if Baylor is in a cycle right now where they're not having one-and-done guys or two-and-done guys with this program, that maybe you finally build some continuity within your program where guys are sticking around for 4 years and they're playing together, learning how to play together. Maybe that'll mean something in the next couple of years with these two classes that are coming in, Jake. It's just a thought, but maybe it means something. I am with you on this. I keep looking at this saying, I think they're trying to figure out what they want to do as far as trying to get a four to get out of this class, because you know, you're right. They signed three guards in the 14. Excuse me. They signed four guards in the 14 class with Damian Durham, Kobe Eubanks, and Lester Medford out of the JUCO up in Iowa. And they got the two guards already this year with King and Lindsay. So that's five guards five of eight kids that they've signed or committed in the last 2 years that are guards. They have two forwards, and they have one, or actually three forwards. You got Dang Dang, who's really a power forward. You got TJ Matt or Terry Mastin, who's a forward, and then you got Aquil, who's a 7-foot power forward. You don't have that big guy in the middle, if you will.
Yeah, it's pretty frustrating for if you're a Baylor fan to, you know, kind of lose hope with this. Not lose hope, but again, when we started doing this podcast, I can't remember if this is our eighth or ninth podcast, but I think in our very first one, we had talked to the AU coach of Tyler Davis and DJ Hogue, and it sounded like they were both Baylor all the way. And frankly, if they weren't going to Baylor, they're going to UCLA or maybe even Kansas, and they end up at Texas A&M. That's kind of the shocker out of all of it.
One last thing, too, and then we'll wrap this up, is that obviously the November signing period is the first signing period, which will be second Wednesday in November, and Baylor just may have these three that sign in November. They still have the late signing period in the spring, so they don't have to rush to get that four. They can kind of take their time. It's not like they're, oh, my gosh, what do we do here? They can kind of work things through and see what they want to do as far as the late signing period if somebody comes up.
Okay, when we come back, we are going to go around the Big 12 and make our game picks, and we'll catch you on the other side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast, and here we are looking at national games and, more importantly for us, Big 12 games. Let's start out looking on the national scene. We're going to make calls on two games. We're going to start out with Georgia at South Carolina. Kevin, what do you think?
You know, I looked at this game, and I really came away impressed with how Georgia played at home between the hedges against Clemson. I love the way they got after the Tigers defensively. And, you know, when I thought, and I still think that South Carolina is a really solid team under Steve Spurrier. He's actually had the better of it over Mark Richt since those two have been facing each other. And, yeah, this is at Williams-Brice Stadium in Columbia. But I'm going to go with Georgia on this. And this really could be for who's going to be the elite team out of the SEC East. I just kind of like the way Georgia looks right now, and I'm going with the Bulldogs in Columbia. And dare I say, I'm an avowed Steve Spurrier fan. I don't have any problem professing that. I really have liked the way Steve handles himself, handles his team. I also kind of like the way he can kind of take some digs at it, and even though he kind of took some shots at A&M and it got it handed right back in his face, he certainly stood up and took it. But I just like Georgia in this game for some reason. I can't tell you why, but maybe I think because their defense is in a lot better shape than South Carolina's defense.
Yeah, I like Georgia too, and I can tell you the reasons because I think South Carolina came in the season a little overrated. I think they're a pretty decent team, but they're not great. I think their defense is very vulnerable right now, especially compared to last year. And, man, Todd Gurley might be the best running back in the nation for Georgia. So, yeah, I like Georgia.
Oh, he was great in that game. He was really, really fun in that game, too.
Another thing I like about Georgia is that it kind of reminds me of Baylor. Last year you opened Wofford, and I know Wofford and Clemson are apple and oranges, but other than sharing the same home state. But, you know, you open, you have a pretty good game, and then you have a bye week. And I think that's that second week of the season bye week, man, it makes you even hungrier to play football because you played a game and then you got to wait two more weeks to play another one. That's what Georgia's done. After the Clemson beating, they have a week off, and so they've had a week off to get ready for South Carolina. This could be like a de facto SEC East championship game. You know, the winner is in much better shape to go to the SEC title game. So yeah, I think Georgia's in good shape with this one.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that, you know, they hired Jeremy Pruitt as the new defensive coordinator at Georgia. He replaced Todd Grantham and went to Louisville. And, you know, of course, and if you don't know Jeremy Pruitt, he was the defensive coordinator at Florida State, which won the national title last year. And it really seems that in the limited time that he's been, you know, the short amount of time, I should say, that he's been at Georgia, which is, I think he was hired in mid to late January, that those kids have really taken to what he's been asking of them because they just shut down Clemson in the second half. So I really like Georgia's chances here.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to go with Georgia also, but I don't rule out the possibility for South Carolina. There's a tendency to think that the way a team plays one week is going to be the way it plays every week. I don't think South Carolina's as bad as they showed against A&M. Georgia has a tendency, they've done it for years, that they play a lot of good games, and then they have one game where you go, what was that?
That is true.
Yeah, and so, but I don't think it's this week. I think it's a pretty good game. I think Georgia wins. Now, our next one that we're looking at nationally, there weren't that many really interesting games this week, but I thought that the University of Central Florida at Missouri might be an interesting game. Missouri made it really a lot further than anybody expected last year. We know about Central Florida. They mimicked last year and that they once again lost to Penn State by 2 points. What do you think, Kevin?
Well, I think the one thing is that, you know, they played that was a really fun ball game, their season opener against Penn State over in Dublin, Ireland. They lost on a field goal at the gun. I mean, they had just scored like a minute and a half to go and took the lead. And then Penn State drove down with like one timeout and kicked the field goal at the gun. They so Central Florida could have very easily won that game. I was really impressed with how Justin Holman, who appears to be their starting quarterback now moving forward, ran that team. I think he's got a really interesting player for them. Obviously, this will be the only Central Florida's second game, but George O'Leary's got a pretty solid program there. I do think Missouri will probably win that game just because it is in Faro Field. And I don't want to take anything away from what Missouri has done because they, you know, they had an easy win over South Dakota State. They won fairly comfortably at Toledo. But having said that, you know, you have probably one of the better quarterbacks in the country that no one really knows about, Matty Mock, who's a sophomore, and he's really been a nice playmaker for them. And I think in that respect, you know, if he was playing at a more high-profile program, if you will, like Alabama or Florida State, he probably would be getting more play nationally than what he is now. He's already thrown 8 touchdown passes in the first 2 games. I look for him to have a pretty solid game against a pretty gritty Central Florida team. Missouri wins, but it's close.
I don't think it's as close as you, Kevin. I think Missouri's actually a pretty solid team. Going to Toledo was a tough road trip. Now coming back home, I think they'll be better off for that. And I know that UCF-Penn State game was a good one. They got outgained more than 2-1 in yardage. It was, I think, 5-11 to 2-46 or something around that mark. I don't know how I know those exact numbers off the top of my head.
What do you know that?
I don't. I think I remember reading it last week or something. But I it was actually a betting column about teams that maybe looked better than they showed, or teams that didn't look as good as they showed. And one of the teams was UCF. I mean, credit a team for playing a competitive game when you're kind of dominating the yardage. But I don't think they're as good as that score indicated. So I like Missouri in this one. By 10 or more.
Okay, I am also going with Missouri, and I think that the thing for me, I like George O'Leary. They asked him last year, how are you making BCS bowls with a bunch of 3-star recruits? And he said, coaching, which, you know, I thought was kind of cool. But the thing with UCF is that Bortles graduated, and replacing a quarterback is a little bit trickier than a lot of people think. Or Bortles came out early. And so I think that until they get a quarterback established, I think they're going to have trouble beating big, good teams. And I think Missouri is a P5 good team. All right. Now, next we move into the Big 12. And these are, Kevin mentioned before we started this segment, that this is going to be kind of statement week for the Big 12. Outside of Baylor, you've got Kansas playing Duke, Tennessee at Oklahoma, so that's SEC Big 12, West Virginia playing Maryland. Then you've got Arkansas playing Texas Tech, Iowa State playing Iowa, Minnesota playing TCU, and UCLA playing Texas. So we have a lot of P5 versus P5 going on in here, and also several Big Ten. We've got Big Ten, Big 12, we've got Pac-12, Big 12, and we've got SEC, Big 12. So Kansas State has a bye, so I think we'll all pick Kansas State on that one. Our next one, Kansas and Duke. Jake, why don't you start this time?
Well, quick note on Kansas State. They have a bye because I believe they play on Thursday night against Auburn after this bye. So, the big week extends into Thursday of next week. So I just wanted to mention that real quick, and that's another huge one. And they probably need an extra week to prepare for the national runner-ups. As far as Kansas at Duke, Stephen, when we were talking before the segment started, he said Duke is beatable. I agree. They're not beatable by Kansas, so I'll take Duke.
And I'm gonna take Duke as well. The Blue Devils have had two fairly impressive wins, although it's against Elon College, and their other win was against Troy, and then they get Tulane. So it's not the most challenging non-conference schedule they're ever going to play, but you know, David Cutcliffe has really found a way to make football fun again in Durham, and I think they will take advantage of it. And I think the way that Kansas only has a chance to win this game is if Montel Cozart really has a breakout party, or coming out party, if you will. It just makes play after play after play. And although I will say this, I did think it was kind of fun to see the local Tech Dallas-Fort Worth product, Corey Avery, whom Baylor had some interest in last year, before he wound up committing to the Jayhawks, starts as a true freshman and rushes for about 90 yards and a touchdown in his college debut, so good for him. Nice to see that happen there. But again, I still like Duke to win this.
Well, you know, the thing that they say about the ACC is that, you know, they've got great offensive, they don't play defense. I'm sorry, that's Big 12.
I will say this, though. If this was a Final Four game, though, I'm surprised there haven't been more basketball references between these two programs, because these are two of the blue blood programs in college basketball, and yet they're meeting on the football field. So, I mean, if this was a Final Four game, it would have everybody in the nation talking about this game, but it's a football game, and everyone's kind of going, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with Duke. I don't think Duke really plays much defense, but, and, you know, if Kansas hadn't lost both their top running backs, you know, just a lot, you know, injuries, and they weren't that good to begin with, I think Kansas might have had a chance, but I don't see it. Moving on, here's the one that's a little tricky. Tennessee at Oklahoma. Tennessee's been making a little comeback the last few years. Kevin, you want to start with this one?
You know, I know what you're saying, Stephen, but I just have this sneaking suspicion that Oklahoma's going to win this pretty comfortably, only because for several reasons. One, it's a pretty young Tennessee team. They've got some interesting players. They got, you know, they've had two really solid wins to get their season started against lesser teams like Arkansas State and Utah State. But Oklahoma's defense, I think, is just going to make life absolutely miserable for the Vols down there, and I do expect them to win this game, something like maybe 35, 38 to 14, something like that. Kind of a learning lesson for the Vols, although I do think Butch Jones is going to get Tennessee moving in the right direction. It just won't be Saturday night in Norman on national TV.
Jake?
Yeah, I Oklahoma has looked, you know, I kind of question being them top five team at the opening of the season. They've earned it so far. And, yeah, I think they'll earn it again. I think they're going to win pretty comfortably and score a win for the Big 12 over the SEC, albeit an overmatched game.
Yeah, I'm going Oklahoma also. I thought that they were maybe a couple of spots high in the preseason rankings, but I thought they were pretty good. I didn't think that it was a mirage against Alabama last year, and I think that they can take Tennessee, and they get Tennessee at home, which the road makes a lot of difference in college ball.
I think it'll be fun. What I want to see, and then we'll move on to the next game, is I just want to see how, you know, the Vols have a senior quarterback in Justin Worley who's gotten off to a pretty good start. How he handles the—I mean, this is the perfect thing, though, for Tennessee. If you're going to play on the road against a top-five team with a pretty young team, is at least you've got a senior quarterback that can kind of help you, maybe deal with some of those things. And he has enough experience. Obviously, Tennessee hasn't had a lot of great experience the last couple of years, but you've got a senior quarterback, and maybe that helps them get over some early nerves. If Tennessee's going to make a game of this, guys, they've got to survive the first quarter. If they can do that, maybe they make this interesting. If not, then probably not.
Okay, and next, I'll go ahead and make the call that I think West Virginia beats Maryland. And I got a lot more respect for West Virginia since the season started. Trickett has been better than I expected. We had kind of compared him to Case McCoy before the start of the season, but he's got Case McCoy's moxie, but he's also got more talent. And West Virginia has done some good stuff so far, and their season kind of spiraled out after Maryland last year, so I think they're going to remember that.
Yeah, this is definitely a payback game for the Mountaineers because they lost this game last year 37-0. They were pretty much humiliated in that game. And this is a pretty good border war between these two teams. This is one of those border rivalry games that not many people really pay attention to like you would between Texas, Oklahoma, or, you know, Tennessee, Alabama, you know, things like that. This is a really good rivalry between these two teams, and they've played it for many, many years. What I want to see is how well West Virginia's defense, which is starting to show some signs that they're not as bad as they've been the last couple of years. You know, Maryland's a team that is not really pretty in how it moves the football. You know, this is their first year in the Big Ten as well. They've played two quarterbacks. C.J. Brown has gotten most of the playing time for them, but, you know, Maryland's not really efficient with the football. They don't have a great running game. They don't throw for a lot of yards. They had a survive last week at South Florida. I just think West Virginia is primed to pull this off.
Well, that's two you pick in West Virginia. I'm inclined to pick Maryland just so I can pick up a game in the standings on y'all. After all, I am at the top right now. I would like to distance myself even more. Okay. However, I like West Virginia in this one, too, narrowly. I think if it were in West Virginia, I wouldn't even think about it. I'd say three words and move on. West Virginia wins. Those are the three words. You know, being road, it changes things. But I think Maryland is not a very good team. And I think maybe I'm overreacting from West Virginia's first two games. But yeah, I like West Virginia. I think it'd be good for the Big 12 to get a road win against a Big 10 team.
Okay, after that we have the Battle of the Ugly Orange Uniforms between the University of Texas at San Antonio and Oklahoma State. I think I'm going to go out on a limb here and take Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I will too. I think UTSA is a pretty darn good team for where it's come from in a short amount of time. And, you know, with J.W. Walsh, the starting Oklahoma State quarterback, out this week, it'll be a little more challenging, although Dax Garmon looked pretty good coming in. And if it were in San Antonio like it was last year, again, I'd think this would be really close, but I think Oklahoma State wins this one and pulls away in the third quarter for a somewhat comfortable win.
I would say so, too, although it's interesting because Larry Coker at UTSA and Mike Gundy were on the Oklahoma State staff, and they were both assistants back in the day. I know that Mike has a lot of respect for what Larry has done at UTSA. I think UTSA will make a pretty fine showing for itself. Remember, they took Arizona to the gun last week down in the Alamo Dome. Yeah. And lost by a field goal. So, you know, it shows you that Larry's got a program pretty decent shape down there for where they're at. But I still like Oklahoma State, and I think the important thing for Oklahoma State is that they got to learn a little bit about Dax Garmon, that he can prove it, and he might actually be a better passer, you know, for an extent. It might be what this offense needs, because I've never been sold on J.W. Walsh as a proficient passer, and he's actually kind of proven everyone right with that. So I think Oklahoma State wins.
Let's move on.
All right. We've got the next one we've got, and this is one, Arkansas at Texas Tech, and this is one where, I don't know, to me this is an absolute toss-up at this point. I'll decide for y'all, tell me what you're thinking. Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll start. This might be a tough one to pick for Kevin. I know he has some Arkansas ties in his family. So, man, I hate to say it. I'm gonna pick Arkansas because, and I don't think Arkansas is all that great, but Texas Tech hasn't shown me much defensively so far, and I think Arkansas has a pretty big and physical offensive line, and they'll be able to move the ball. I think this is really the most important game in the Big 12 this week. Because you got really the worst team in the SEC West from last year and one of the worst teams overall in the SEC going up against a bowl team from the Big 12. And frankly, it would look pretty bad if Tech loses at a home game to a bad SEC team. It just, you know, the conference would lose a little respect. So you know what? After saying that, I'm going to pick Tech. I'm gonna be a homer, and I'm going to pick
Tech. Way to reverse yourself right in the middle of this.
I did. I changed because I think the Big 12 needs this, and I'm picking against my brain and going with a Big 12 homer pick. I hate to say it, but that's the truth of it.
You know, what I love about this game is that it feels like the Southwest Conference at 1987-88 when Arkansas and Texas Tech are playing each other, and it's like, you know, the battle for the cotton, you know, get to go to the Cotton Bowl, you know, things like that. That's what it really makes me think of, you know, for all of us older folks who can remember the glory days of the Southwest Conference. It's nice to see these types of series revived every now and then. It should be a lot of fun. I think the real interesting thing is how much Texas Tech's defensive front, very questionable, can hold up to Arkansas's defensive line, offensive line. And Arkansas's got a really good running game, Jake, as you mentioned. I love Alex Collins, the Arkansas running back. I think he's a five-star kid. I think he had like four carries for 138 yards last week in a blowout guarantee game over Nicholls State. Yeah. But I mean, he's shown flashes throughout his career. The thing with Tech that bothers me is the fact that not only is their defense so suspect, but man, they just commit a lot of penalties. Now Baylor can commit penalties and get away with it because their talent is such where it is. Tech cannot do that because their talent is not where it needs to be. And as you mentioned, Jake, because the political purposes in my household, I'm going with the Razorbacks. I think it's going to be close. I think, to be honest with you, I don't know if it would hurt the league as much as you think it would, just because what everyone thinks and what Arkansas is capable of doing this year or not capable of doing. I actually think the Razorbacks are going to be a little bit better this year than people think they are. I think they're good enough to try and find a way to squeeze out six wins and get to a bowl. But I think that Arkansas wins this game like 23-20, plus the fact, too, the weather is going to be pretty cooperative in Texas with the big front moving through, so Arkansas wearing down shouldn't be an issue.
I'm going to go with Tech just because I have no other reason, but I know that Arkansas winning would make Jerry Jones happy, and I'm not going to predict anything that would make Jerry Jones happy. No, seriously, I'm not sold on Tech. Y'all know that. I don't think that they're a particularly, you know, I'm worried about the quarterbacks that kept defecting. I'm not sure what's going on inside the room there. I'm not sure how together they are as a team, but I'm going to go ahead and pick Tech. All right, next we have Iowa State at Iowa, and I'm going to go homer with Iowa State. I don't think Iowa's a very good team. Iowa State showed me more last week than I expected, and Iowa State also really gets up for this team because I don't think they like Iowa being like the marquee team in Iowa. Thoughts?
I'm going to go Iowa because the game is in Iowa City, and you know, really the Hawkeyes have not looked really good in either of their first two games against Northern Iowa. And they had a rally in the fourth quarter and scored the game-winning touchdown with like a minute and change to go to beat Ball State. So this was a team that was actually projected to have high expectations for contending for the Big Ten Western Division Championship. If that's what they think that they've got there, then that division is going to be really, really up in the air. But that being said, you know, I just like Iowa in this game. If this game was being played in Ames, I'd probably go with Iowa State, but because it's in Iowa City, the battle for the dreaded Cy Hawk Trophy, I'm going to go with the Hawkeyes in this. And by the way, two things about Iowa is that, one, it is a four-letter word, and I'm just telling you a fact that it is a four-letter word, and Iowa really stands for I owe the world an apology.
So you got family in Iowa.
I can't top that. I don't know what else to say about Iowa. I've never been to the state. I hear it's lovely. I'm going to pick Iowa as well, just because I think Iowa State is a different team at home than they are on the road. You know, what we saw against Kansas State last week, I don't think they can replicate that on the road against Iowa. So, score one for the Big Ten, unfortunately.
All right, and then we have another Big Ten, and that's Minnesota at TCU.
Evan, lead us off here. You know a little about Minnesota, don't you?
Yeah, I know a little bit about the Gophers. They first of all, looks like their quarterback, Mitch Leidner, who had a knee injury against Middle Tennessee State, looks like he's going to go. Here's the brief synopsis of the Gophers. Very good defense team. They are very much of a lunch pail team. They really reflect Jerry Kill. They are very physical with their running game. Trevor Cobb is a really good running back. Their passing game leaves a lot to be desired. Mitch Leidner has to make plays in order for this. I can absolutely see TCU loading the box with eight guys and daring Mitch Leidner to try and beat them because they're going to try and stuff it against Trevor Cobb the entire day. If Mitch Leidner can actually make some plays in the passing game, that really turns the game around. I do, as much as I would like to pick Minnesota, with all due respect to my late father, who is a graduate of the University of Minnesota, I'm going to go with TCU in this. But I do think it will be a very interesting ballgame. I think Minnesota's defense, and the other thing talking about the weather, I think a lot of people were concerned about, you know, is Minnesota going to wilt because it could be 94 degrees in the middle of the afternoon in the middle of September. But with that front moving through, I think the game time temperature is going to be like 74 when it kicks off after this front's pushed through. So that might help the Gophers to an extent. But I just think now I'll say this, Jake, and Stephen, you guys both know this with TCU. If the Horned Frogs turn it over, and they've done a really good job of turning it over the last 2 years, but if they make it, you know, three turnovers like this and help Minnesota out, I mean, we saw the turnovers really help Baylor last year at Amon Carter. If they do that again and shoot themselves in the foot, the Minnesota can pull this out. If they play fairly clean, like a turnover maybe two, then I think TCU wins the game, and that's why I'm picking the Horned Frogs.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this matchup. I think actually TCU wins this handily. People talk about SEC speed. I think people overlook Big 12 speed, and TCU has it, especially on defense. And I think these teams, like you said, on offense that try to impose their will and maybe aren't as fast paced, and I think TCU can eat up this kind of offense. So if they don't, and shoot, if they lose, then man, I mean, the love affair with Gary Patterson is not coming to an end, but it's going to be questioned. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think TCU wins this, and I think they end up winning by a couple touchdowns or more.
Yeah, and Mitch Leidner is going to have the game of his life in play because he's really been unimpressive in these first two games against Eastern Illinois and Middle Tennessee State, even though the Gophers pretty much won those first two games at the half. But Leidner's just going to have to come into his own in order for Minnesota to really have a chance to pull this off on the road.
Okay, I'm going with TCU. I do not underestimate the Angry Elf. He can pull some wins out. He's a really good motivator, and I don't see Minnesota being able to keep up with him. And, Jake, you picked Oregon over Michigan State last week, and right now the Big Ten's chances of being in the playoffs are pretty much flatlined. I think TCU knocks it out. Now, to me, being a University of Texas grad, it pains me, but I'm going to pick UCLA over Texas. And UCLA, I don't think they're as good as people are predicting them. They've really had to scratch out some wins. But I saw some things in Charlie Strong's press conference that were a little bit concerning to me. He said the team wasn't ready to play against Brigham Young, and that's a home game. It's a game that they lost last year. It was one of the two games that got their coach fired, and the team wasn't up for it. And I'm wondering if at some point in time, when you keep kicking people off the team, I'm wondering if maybe it might not be good down in Horntown. Just because I think maybe at a certain point in time, the players say, it doesn't matter what we do, he's going to kick us off the team.
I agree, Kevin, Steven. I think players are a little on edge right now. I am on the record of saying Charlie Strong will be successful at Texas. I'll also be on the record that it's not going to be hugely successful this year. I think he's going to take some time to impose his will and his culture on the program. I also agree, I don't think UCLA is a top 10 team, but I think they're better than Texas right now, and I think Brett Hundley, the UCLA quarterback, is a guy that Texas is going to have trouble stopping, both running and throwing, and I think UCLA wins this one. Although, you know, UCLA, a top team, and Texas coming off a loss, I think some people might be expecting a blowout. I think it's going to be a very close game. Wouldn't surprise me if Texas wins, but I like UCLA.
See, and that, I think, Jake, where was the game that we thought where I thought it was going to be close and you thought it was going to be the blow? Was that Missouri and Central Florida?
Yeah, maybe so.
Okay, yeah. And see, that's what I think. I think this is going to be an absolute rout for UCLA over Texas. I know Texas fans always kind of shake their heads when they go, you know, that 66-3 game when it was called Route 63, I think the Dallas Morning News when they played that game back in the 1990s. But here's the interesting thing about UCLA, and I heard this today, Wednesday, while I was driving around doing some errands. In the 2 years and two games that Brett Hundley has played quarterback, he has been sacked 98 times. 98. And, of course, you know, Baylor contributed to that in that Holiday Bowl.
Yeah, like 78 sacks.
I think it was 8 of those sacks, yeah. But for quarterbacks who have played as long as Brett has played, he has been sacked 20 more times than the nearest guy that is next to him. Now, I don't know if that speaks to the offensive line, Brett holding the ball longer than he needs to, whatever you want to call it, making bad decisions. What you can attribute that to a lot of things. I think it's the offensive line. But I do think that UCLA is not. I agree with you. I do not think UCLA is the team that people think that it was, and I think the Bruins could probably wind up losing three games this year and not be in the Pac-12 South race, much less even have a chance to get into the national playoff, although that some people were thinking about that, but it won't happen this week. I'll say this. If Cedric Reed and company, those guys, if they are getting pressure on Brett Hundley at AT&T Stadium, that will really tell you what UCLA's offensive line is all about. And you know, the game is won in the trenches, and if this team really, really struggles fending off Texas, then we're going to find out that UCLA is this paper tiger. I don't think it's going to happen this week. I just think Texas has too many problems personnel-wise, not enough depth. Tyrone Swoops, serviceable in his first game, but then Jackson Shipley is still questionable for this game, and if you don't have him, who do you have catching the football for that team? I mean, they are so limited offensively, what they can do, it's downright scary. And Stephen, to touch on what you saw from Charlie Strong's comments in the Big 12 call, when the way they were going through their pregame warm-up, he said that he looked at one of his trainers and said, I was about to pull these guys off the field and have them come back out and do the pregame warm-ups again because they looked really flat. And, you know, this could be a really tough year for Texas. They may, if they get to 6 wins and get to a bowl game, that would be an absolutely historic success. I would not be surprised if this Texas season finishes with 4 or 5 wins. It could get that nasty in Austin.
I wouldn't go that far. But, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I think that's an extremely low end, and that's like with Tyrone Swoops being a total bust. Which is possible. Yeah, you're right. But
am I going shock jock with that statement? I guess maybe so, but who knows?
Maybe a little. Maybe a little. Let's move on. I think we got one more game to predict.
Well, I know one of the reporters asked Charlie Strong, is the honeymoon over after the Brigham Young game? And he said, when did I have one? And if they lose to UCLA, you'll see a honeymoon that's really over.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, and our last game, I think we've already talked about it, but let's go ahead and get scores on the record. I'm going Baylor 56, Buffalo 10.
And I am going Baylor 55, Buffalo 13.
Wait, you can't do that, Kevin, because that's the exact score I have.
What?
Yeah, actually, I had Baylor 55-17, and I thought, I don't know. I don't see them giving up that many points, which is weird to say about a Baylor road team.
But, all right, then I'll go Baylor. Then I'll go Baylor 55-7.
Okay, and then I'll one up you, and I'll go Baylor 59-13. So there we go. That's 8 touchdowns and a field goal, and a Chris Callahan topping it off. Okay. So now we've got different scores, and I'll make sure to reflect that on the site. And y'all have a lot of catching up to do on this on our picks after 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah, we've got a game.
All right, stop rubbing it in our face, Jake, okay?
I'm just kidding. I never lead in these things. I got to talk smack while I have the lead.
I don't know if I'm picking it again. I took Tech. So, anyway, that's it. We'll see you next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
Thanks for listening.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Ron Nichols or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.